All righty. Well, everyone's kind of finding their way back in. Just put the agenda back up on the screen so everyone's aware of where we're going here. Two more sessions before we break for lunch. Appreciate all the questions and the engagement here. Patty and Christina mentioned it. The feedback's always really helpful. And staff will still be around during lunch if there's any other questions. But we'll keep things moving along here with our updated member questionnaire session. So I'll turn it over to you, Tracy.
All right. Thank you. All right. Good afternoon. I am Tracy Hunt. I am a director in the Futures Compliance Department in Chicago, and I oversee staff that audit our members. I have also spent the last few years working on the member questionnaire and the updates that we've made and the new rule that I'm going to talk to you about today. So Compliance Rule 2-52 and its corresponding interpretive notice both detail out the requirements around our member questionnaire. I'll talk a little bit more about this later, but the rule has been approved. We are looking at an effective date of later this fall, and I'll go through more specifics towards the end of my presentation. So the first question, what is the member questionnaire? Well, it's the new name for what we used to call the annual questionnaire. The annual questionnaire had been something that every firm completed as part of its annual update process. And every member firm had a different date. It was tied to when the firm becomes registered. So when you were doing your annual updates, you were paying your dues, paying your fees, and completing the questionnaire for us. The questionnaire, basically, we updated a few years ago to make it more smart, more tailored to firm operations. We added questions about products that hadn't been around when we first did the questionnaire. So we added more on swaps. We added questions on digital assets. And it really is the main source of information that we have about you all. It's really important to us. We use it in everything we do. We plan our exams around what your business is. Your reporting requirements can be based on what your business is. So it really gives us a feel for what your operations are, and any time you would call us or anything comes across our desk, that's what we're going to look at and see what does this firm do. Previously, the only place that we mentioned the questionnaire was in our bylaw 301, which just said you have to do this annually, and if you don't do it, it would be deemed a request to withdraw. Because we want to make sure that we're getting this information and we stress how important it is, we determined to create a rule that would better encompass what the questionnaire is, what's required in there, when and how it's filed, and by who. So there's three main areas of focus, and I'm going to go through them now, and then later slides will go into each area. So the first new part of the rule is that members are going to be required to update the questionnaire when they have a material change in their business operations. The second part is that the rule is going to require that a specific individual at a firm submit the questionnaire, and that individual will be based on what the firm's registration category is. And the third requirement is that we have some of our members that are not doing any commodity interest business, which we know from the answers that they give us on their questionnaire. And so for those firms, we want to make sure we have updated information on them, so we'll be requiring inactive firms to have to complete a semi-annual filing every 6 months. So let's talk about each of these areas. The first one, material changes in a firm's business operations. So as I've said before, and I'm going to say this entire time, the questionnaire is very important to us. It tells us everything about your business operations, and we want to make sure that we've got current updated information from you. Anytime we're talking to a firm during an exam, we're asking them to make sure it's updated. We're looking at, during an exam, what are your business operations? Is your questionnaire updated? And a lot of times it's not, and we have firms that have to go in and it's available throughout the year, so we ask you to make changes. So we want firms going in there and updating it because, as I said, it does drive certain reporting requirements. We talked about this with our advisory committees, and generally, of course, they were looking for a complete and full list of everything that NFA would consider a material change, and we're not going to do that. Generally, we don't do that, right? Anytime we've put out any kind of procedures, we've been a little bit more broad because we really want firms to tailor it to their operations. One size doesn't fit all. I can't put out every possible material change that we might encounter. So what we did do, though, is we tried to put some examples in the interpretive notice of what we might consider. So if a firm starts a new business line, you are suddenly doing digital assets or Forex, that's something we would expect you to go in and update for us. Let's say you're a CPO and you start operating a pool that commences operations. You need to go in there, list the pool if it's not, and indicate that it's operated, when it received funds, et cetera. An introducing broker, if your revenue increases such that you trigger record keeping requirements and tape recording requirements under CFTC rules, we would want you to update that. But what we really mention and stress in the interpretive notice is that the firms are really the ones who can best determine what is material to your business operations. And so we would expect that once you determine something is material, then you're going in and you're updating the questionnaire timely. Okay. The second piece is that we are requiring now that specific individuals at a firm submit the questionnaire, and this would mean submit the annual and submit any changes that happen throughout the year. So first, if a firm is solely registered as a swap dealer or a major swap participant, it has to be somebody who is a listed principal. For all of our other registration categories, it has to be someone that is both a registered AP and a listed principal. So why did we do this? Well, we do think it's important, right? We like the information in here to be as updated as possible. What we were seeing occasionally was that third parties were submitting on behalf of firms, attorneys or compliance consultants, and we are by no means saying that those people aren't knowledgeable about your business. They certainly are. You're paying them to be knowledgeable about your business, but we want to make sure that the firms understand that this is important information, and we want them to be held accountable for what they're putting in there and what they're telling us. And generally, we would expect that someone who is knowledgeable about the operations is one of these categories, either a principal or both an AP principal. In a few instances in the past, we have had instances where firms will provide us false information or misleading information on the questionnaire. And if we ever had a firm that did this, and if we ever wanted to take some sort of disciplinary action against that firm, we would have to have an individual at that firm that would be a registered AP. So we wouldn't be able to take disciplinary action. The point of this rule is not to take disciplinary action against you. We're not looking to drum up cases. But we have had instances where that's been an issue, and we haven't had authority over those individuals. So we feel that this is how we can stress to the firms, this is important, and we want you to make it an important part of your job. One thing to note, we will continue to have varying degrees of access. So I believe it's called update versus submit access. So we understand that your person who's submitting might not be the one who's filling out all of the information. Clearly, you have individuals within the different categories or reporting lines or areas at your firm that are more knowledgeable. So they will still be able to have update access, meaning you can grant them the ability to go in, complete the form, add the answers. But at the end of the day, when the form is required to be submitted, actually pressing the submit button, logging in, has to be a person that's one of these categories. Okay. The third part of the rule is that we are requiring it be completed semi-annually by firms that are inactive in the commodity interest space, which we can tell from your questionnaire. So it's not a huge part of our population, but we do have members that have been around that are not doing any business, and they do pose risk to us, right? We don't get a lot of information from them. If they're not doing business, they're not submitting, they don't have any pools, they're not submitting filings on those. We don't have anything other than their questionnaire maybe that's telling us what they're doing, and so there is a little bit of reputational risk there for us. So what we've decided to do is that if we can see at the annual update that the firm is inactive in commodity interest, 6 months later, if they haven't updated the questionnaire, so they're still appearing to us to be inactive in commodity interest business, they will get another filing. All of it will be the same as it was at the annual time. So it'll be a call created in EasyFile with a due date. You'll still get email reminders and notices about having to do it. It'll just be a six-month requirement instead of your annual requirement. Partly with this, then, we are going to be introducing a new banner in our basic system. So basic is our public-facing website where the public can go in and look up firms and individuals and see what they're registered as and what kind of categories they're conducting business in. What we're going to be doing is, if we know from the questionnaire that you're inactive in commodity interest business, there will be a banner that will say that, something to the effect of, based on information the firm submitted to NFA, this firm is not doing business in commodity interest. That banner is something that can come down as part of overnight processing of NFA if you start to do business. So to the extent you see that banner out there, and if you think it's inaccurate, or if you started doing business that day, when you update the questionnaire for that material change in business, overnight processing will remove the banner, so it won't be out there. So that's why we really want this six-month requirement. Is we don't want to be out there saying this firm's inactive if they really are and doing business. So we're adding that six-month requirement for those firms to make sure that what we're telling the public is accurate and based on what the firm has told us. All of the requirements that I just discussed, the details are in the interpretive notice, which is also on our website right now. Excuse me. Okay, so as I mentioned earlier, the only rule that we had that required the questionnaire was our bylaw 301, which required it to be completed annually. So we had to amend the bylaw to make some changes for this new rule. The bylaw will now refer to the compliance rule 252. We still require that the six-month filing and the annual update filing are still required. And if you don't submit them, just like the bylaw currently reads, it would be deemed a request to withdraw your membership. It's important to note, just like now, that is not immediate. It doesn't happen overnight. So if your filing is due on September 1, generally speaking, it's at least 32, 33 days. It's a manual process before the membership would actually be withdrawn. And in some cases, we don't even let the membership be withdrawn, depending on what the firm is doing or what kind of business they have. So to the extent that you don't make that 9-1 deadline, it doesn't mean that the next day you're going to lose your membership. So just keep that in mind. Clearly, we want you to submit it timely since the information is important to us, but it's not going to happen overnight that the firm would be withdrawn. We also updated the bylaw to refer to it now as the member questionnaire instead of annual. And then the current bylaw had some language in there that excluded FCMs for which we are not the designated self-regulatory organization. In practice, those firms are filing the questionnaire. They always have been. It's a little bit less on their FCM operations since we're not the DSRO, but we still want to get that information from them, so we updated the bylaw to be more clear that it's required for all members. All right, so what comes next? So at this point, as I mentioned, we submitted the rule and the interpret and the bylaw to the CFTC last month. It's on our website under the rule submissions to the CFTC. It was in February of 2024. They have approved it. We are anticipating a notice to members coming out in the next few weeks. It will indicate that the effective date of the rule is October 15th. That means that any questionnaires submitted on or after October 15th have to be submitted by one of the approved submitters. The notice to members will also indicate that October 15th is the first date that the inactive banner will be shown in BASIC. In the next few months, we're making changes to the online registration system. That's where firms go in and assign the submit capability or the update capability to the individuals. So we anticipate that occurring, the changes being finalized, sometime in July. So at that point, we will send another notice to members telling you, go in, start figuring out who you need to give access to, give those individuals access, to give you some time to create the users before the October 15th date. So I would anticipate mid-July that notice to members would be coming out. When you go in to give the access, we will be checking for who are you giving submit access to, right? So if it's an AP print, we know who those people are. So you will have some restrictions on who you can give the submit capability to. We will also check upon submission of the questionnaire that the user that logged in and submitted the questionnaire is still an appropriate person to have that capabilities. What we're hoping to do is that right now, anyone who currently has access to submit or update the questionnaire, port them over, I guess you would call it, to have the update access, and then you would just need to go in and either give them submit capabilities or identify somebody else as a submit capability. So start thinking now about who you've got in there. Is that person appropriate? Do I need to add someone else, change someone else? But we'll send out a notice when you have the ability to actually make those changes in the online registration system. Another thing I just wanted to mention that I don't know how many people know this, but we have templates out there for every question in the questionnaire. We put them out within the last year or so. There's maybe 8 or 9 different templates broken out by registration category. So there's a general template, and then there's a category for each registration category. It's got every question in there. So it doesn't mean you're going to have to complete all of those since it is a smart functionality, but at least you could look now if you wanted to see what kind of questions we do ask. And, you know, if this one answers yes, this one pops up next. So you can see all of that in the templates. We anticipate updating those. We don't make a ton of changes to the questionnaire throughout the year, so I would guess maybe quarterly is that we would be trying to update those. But those are out there on our website, and they're a great resource just to have an idea of what kind of questions you're going to need to know to be prepared before you submit. That is all I had. Questions? There's some over here, Joel.
Hi. I have kind of general question on this, representing like a larger swap dealer. One of the things that we're kind of challenged by and thinking about is our principals are quite senior folks, and there's not really one obvious principal that would have, I guess, visibility into all of the things that are asked about in the questionnaire. So we're anticipating that we may need to establish some sort of like sub-certification process or otherwise to address that point. And I think kind of two things that we're, you know, starting to think about is, number one, the questionnaire itself is only open, I think, 30 days before the submission date. Is there any thought about extending that time period? And then my second question is, our registrations are all kind of different times throughout the year, so there's not like one consistent time frame. And
what do you mean by
meaning
different time
like
frames?
The questionnaire is triggered by, I think, when you registered the entity. So one may be like due in March versus another in June versus another
because
in October.
You have multiple entities.
Yeah,
okay,
for
sorry.
Multiple entities, okay. Exactly. Yeah. And my question there is there any ability for an entity to request to change their due date so that, you know, we would be able to align across our firm as a whole?
So
and
I can
have,
second question, no.
Okay.
Only because that's all tied to when the firm became registered, and it's not just the questionnaire that would be affected by that. It's dues and fees and other certifications. So currently there was no plan to allow for that.
Okay. Yeah, I was curious if the questionnaire maybe would be on like a calendar cadence instead of based on registration date.
No, right now I think when all of this started way back in the day, right, it was just tied to your registration date, and that's how we were able to say you've been around a year, now you pay your dues and fees. So currently there is no plan to change that or to allow firms to change that. With regards to the questionnaire, I believe it opens up within 60 days. I can check on that, though. So if you have – let me think about this to make sure I get the days right. If you have a filing due on May 1st, I believe we start generating the calls for those filings like mid-March, early to mid-March. So it might be closer to 45 days or 60 days. I don't know that we would consider. I don't know that we've considered changing that or opening up early, because we really want to make sure that when you're submitting the information, it's timely. And so I know that there are caveats in there with regards to making sure that the information you provided is as of a date that is not, I think it says, not more than 90 days. If you try to enter in an as-of date, it might limit you on the 60 or 90 days. I'd have to check on that. But I don't know that we've considered opening it earlier.
Okay. Yeah, I think our concern is just, you know, first, obviously, you have to gather all the data,
right,
and then, you know, kind of make sure that folks are comfortable with that information.
Not every question. I don't know the specifics, and I couldn't tell you every single question, but not every single question gets wiped. So a lot of the questions will carry over from year to year.
Yeah.
So at least some of it is in there, but I can take that back.
Cool. Thanks.
Thank you. There was.
Hi. Given the that the annual membership questionnaire isn't the only document that goes through the online registration system, will there be an ability to have various submitters?
So right now, the way the system is set up in the online registration system, you create a user, mm-hmm. and then you get to pick from a bunch of different. That's going to still be there because the creation of the user would be for different systems, but you could go in and give yourself update. You could give another person update. You could give three people submit capabilities. So there's no limit on how many you give. It's more just limited on the submit capability is going to be tied to a specific, making sure it's tied to a specific AP PRIN or principal.
Okay.
Is that answering you?
Yes, so multiple submitters are possible.
Multiple update, multiple submitters.
Okay.
Yes.
But it's really just important that it's the principal who's submitting.
Yes, when you try to give.
Document, not everything else.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Right.
Just this is
Thank
just
you.
For the questionnaire. There's other filings that are in there that have different requirements or rules from the CFTC on who submits specific to the questionnaire. That's just what I'm talking about.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Two follow-up questions just to be very precise, because I'm not sure if I got it. Is the requirement that the principal should be registered and be the one fitting the system, or what you are requesting is an attestation signed by the principal that is going to go next to the questionnaire?
The principal needs to be the one to submit it. Other individuals can fill out the answers. And so they would have access to update. So you can have someone else go in and fill out the questions and give the answers. But at the end of the questionnaire, when you go to submit it, there is an oath/attestation already included in there. And that's when we will be looking to make sure that whoever logs in and is trying to hit the submit button is an appropriate person.
Got it. Clear. And now let me follow up on one of your answers, actually, the ASOF. I'm going through the process, and there are some specific questions that are related to metrics or figures. That it's not clear to me if the ASOF is the day of the renewal. Like I received the confirmation, like let's say March 31st, or if I'm allowed to provide the fiscal year metrics.
I believe at the very top of one of the first pages of the questionnaire, it has an as-of date that you need to. So we would assume that most of the questions would be as of that date, which I believe you're limited if you try to put in something that's more than 90 days old. So it doesn't necessarily mean that when you're in there that you have to give information from that day or yesterday, because again, we're expecting that you might need to pull together revenue or some figure that isn't completed or finalized. So, but you have like a 90-day window mm-hmm. that those answers should be as of. And you know, if we're going to come out and do an exam of you and we find that your numbers are a little bit off from the previous month, again, we're looking for material changes where we might say that it needs to be updated. But I think if you're in that 90 window, it's okay.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
Did the NFA consider having the principal AP sign an attestation and have someone else submit it? Just for context, coming from a larger firm, having our CEO or CIO be the only people that can submit it is a little bit cumbersome.
We talked about that. Given what we could already see from our other members, we already have a lot of members that are having an individual submit under these new requirements. When we talked about doing a separate attestation, we felt that that wouldn't really get us what we wanted, in that we want to make sure that it is being taken seriously. And while we're not saying that anybody would be lying about the oath or the certification, the questionnaire itself already has an oath in there. And so we want to make sure that while we understand you might be designating somebody else to complete it, we still want that person to be one of the categories. Anyone else? No? Okay.